Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We've had a little glitch tonight. We are here. This is Patriot Education. I'm your hostess, Terry Rowland. We are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com. We had originally scheduled our show on a regular basis at 7 p.m., and we attempted to change the timing to 6 p.m., but it kept coming on at 7 until tonight. So for those of you who may be listening in or just browsing to see what's being said tonight on Blog Talk, my apologies for the confusion in times. We will be on, apparently, from now on, from 6 p.m. till 7:30 every Thursday evening on Blog Talk Radio for Patriot Education. For those of you who may have tuned in last week, we talked a little bit about what you might want from your public education system. Tonight, my topic is self-esteem versus self-respect. When I was a little girl, I was taught that the best form of self-respect was to live by the golden rule, to treat others the way you wish to be treated. That showed that you respected yourself and you respected other people as well. Unfortunately, today's progressive education is much more interested in self-esteem. And the definition of self-esteem that they appear to favor means I am more important than anything else in the world, and anything that doesn't make me feel good, I should avoid or complain about. Well, self-esteem, actually, in psychological terms, means liking oneself. It doesn't mean being madly, passionately in love with oneself to the detriment of anybody else and promoting oneself above the comfort of anything in the world because oneself is the most important thing in the universe. Unfortunately, this interpretation gives most people, most young people, license to behave like uncivilized monsters. I have been working today at my middle school because our Christmas break ended on Wednesday. I was substituting for one of the paraprofessional aides, mostly in eighth grade classes, as that were what we call collaborative classes. That's the infamous 60-40 percentage of 60% average or above and 40% special ed. And the function of a paraprofessional aide in a collaborative classroom is basically to go around the room and stop and help all of the special ed students who cannot follow or keep up with the pace of the teacher's teaching. Well, in the process of doing that, I witnessed the most rude, disrespectful, belligerent conduct worthy of brats in a playpen from eighth grade students. Now, this isn't new. It's not as if I've never seen this before. I see it every day when I'm forced to substitute in a classroom. But it gave me pause, particularly given the reiteration over and over and over again over how we must protect our children from violence and we must sequester all guns and we must make sure that they are perfectly safe 100% of the time. And the understanding that I have that many of them consider violence perfectly acceptable as a means of indicating affection. When I was young and in middle school, young ladies did not hit young gentlemen as a form of, gee, I think you're cute. And young gentlemen who attempted to hit young ladies were promptly hauled off to the woodshed, and it was illustrated to them that a gentleman, a man, does not beat up on women. The idea that anybody would condone violent physical behavior as a means of expressing affection among teenagers is ridiculous. My friend Linda, who's visiting us in the chat room, and I'm so glad she got here, just mentioned a website. It's called takethechallenge.net. It's for parents and educators and concerned citizens to take a look at exactly how the impact of violence in our media is affecting our kids. For any of you who did not happen to catch Glenn's show this evening, he had a retired Army colonel on who is a psychologist and psychiatrist, and whose job is to deal with two aspects of military life, I guess you could say. One is post-traumatic stress disorder, which many soldiers suffer from on returning from battlefield. And the other is conditioning law enforcement and military personnel not to agonize over taking life, but to reflexively shoot when they see what is perceivably a threat. In other words, to desensitize them to the idea that what they're shooting at is another human being. In law enforcement and in the military, this is extraordinarily important. Otherwise, evil and dangerous people who would probably shoot you might be able to do it because a law enforcement officer hesitated because he wondered if the perpetrator who was about to shoot you maybe had a wife and 10 little kiddies at home. It's a sad commentary on our kids. And the predominance of violence in the video games and the movies that they watch and devour fiendishly is reflected in their attitude toward each other and toward their elders. When I was in school, the most violent thing we saw on television were Westerns. They were set in another time period. The good guys generally didn't shoot people just because they happened to get out of the bed on the wrong side that morning. They didn't take delight in killing. Sometimes they basically broke down over having to do it. But they lived in a different time where there was no law enforcement. There were no police officers. There was no 911 to call. If your town or your home or your farm was threatened by a marauder who wished to take from you everything you had, including your life, you were defenseless unless you were able to shoot back. And the vast majority of Westerners didn't run up and down the streets killing people for fun. They generally wore a handgun or carried a rifle because it was a dangerous world out there. We grew up understanding that it was a dangerous world for them, but that our world, our American world, was peopled by civilized families with civilized children who were taught that courtesy and respect towards one's elders was the norm. We didn't, if there was a fight, okay, between students, it was a fist fight, and it happened after school, usually off school grounds, between a couple of guys who were mad at each other, and half the time getting it out of their system and pummeling each other for a while. Usually they figured out, doggone it, this hurts, maybe I don't want to do this anymore. Now we have anti-bullying seminars every week. We have the self-esteem and the we can't excel because it'll make somebody feel bad, and offending someone by expressing your belief in spirituality or asking a question that they don't like is the most heinous sin imaginable. And yet we have children shooting other children. Where is the line, ladies and gentlemen, between self-respect and self-esteem? Is self-esteem a love affair with one's baser nature? The idea that I love myself, I can't wait to go and prove it by shooting 20 or 30 people? What is self-esteem? Is it being told that everything you do is wonderful? So that as far as you are concerned, every impulse should be acted upon because obviously there are no consequences and everybody keeps telling you you can't help it. The attitudes and behaviors of our kids, ladies and gentlemen, have deteriorated to the point that I don't even recognize them as American children anymore. Not all of them. Please don't think that I am saying every kid in school is an incipient sociopath. They're not. But somehow or other, the idea that showing courtesy, being polite, being respectful to one's elders is somehow demeaning to the person being respectful. That somehow or other you are lowering your self-worth if you say yes, ma'am, or no, sir, or excuse me, or I beg your pardon, or thank you, or please. Courtesy to people, courtesy to the other members of the human race, is something that is taught. It is not inherent, ladies and gentlemen. It is not built into our genes. We teach it within a framework of society. And societies that do not teach behavior and courtesy and respect generally don't last very long because they wind up being a lot like South American dictatorships, whereas there's a coup every 18 months and you get a new dictator in power. It is the idea that somehow or other the group is going to come up with some collective impulse to all sit around, hug one another, and sing Kumbaya with absolutely no training or consequences for behavior that is societally unacceptable or inappropriate. When I see 12, 13, 14-year-olds, boys and girls, girls walking up to guys and punching them on the shoulder, I don't mean just reaching out and patting. I mean punching them as if they were a punching bag and said, oh, well, he knows it's just in fun. Or, yeah, this is my boyfriend. Over and above video games and movies, try some rap music sometime, especially the gangsta-type rap. The degrading terminology used toward women. The creating the vision of a police officer as a despotic, evil killing machine who hates you because of your color or the neighborhood you live in. When I grew up, we were all told, if you're in trouble or you're lost, you find a policeman. He'll help you. And you are respectful to him. You say, yes, officer. Please, officer. Because this man is going to protect you and help you and take care of you and restore you to your family. Police officers weren't pigs or scum or fuzz or cops. My parents didn't like me to use the term cop. They felt it was insulting. We were taught to say policeman or officer or police officer because it was a form of respect to men, mostly men at that time, who did a dangerous but incredibly important job. They were the ones you called to help you when you were in trouble. They were the ones you went to when you were lost or frightened or saw something bad. Now, the idea that police officers are all bullying monsters seems to be standard operating procedure. And you can trace that back, woe be it to me, because I was part of that generation, to the 1960s and the various demonstrations and so on and so forth, the anti-war rallies, the civil rights situations. All of those things gave police officers a bad name because the police officers that we had been taught were there to help and protect people were shown aiding and abetting those who were trying to harm people simply because of the color of their skin, or breaking up groups of students who were unarmed, carrying flowers, protesting the wickedness of war. The attitude toward law enforcement and what they did changed, and it continued to change with the popularity of the gang influence and the Black Panthers and the various other groups of people who believed that violence was the answer to everything and that applied violence would make the world better. Well, violence sometimes is the answer, but generally it's not the question. In other words, you don't get violent first and then wait and get violent again when somebody tries to protect themselves. Self-esteem. I'm wonderful. I'm terrific. You can't put me down. You can't make me feel bad about myself just because I didn't do something right. You have to praise me for everything I do because I'm unique. I'm special. I'm fill in the blank. Whatever you want. People are not carbon copies. They're not graphics on a video game screen. They're not characters in a movie or a TV show or icons or idols. They are simply people, and they come all sorts. Yes, there are people who enter law enforcement who take delight in exerting their authority over others. They are, if you will, authorized bulliers. My experience has been that there are not very many police officers who are like that. But if you look at a lot of the movies and television and video games and a lot of other things that have come out, the people that we were taught to look up to and to respect have been turned into monsters. Parents have been turned into idiots. You look at television shows where you've got smart alecky, back-talking, disrespectful, foul-mouthed children getting all the laughs and applause, and the parents are standing there looking bewildered and ineffectual and totally incapable of any kind of rule setting or common sense parenting. Parents like Marge and Homer Simpson, for example, which was intended to be an adult show. Where do you think so many of these kids pick up the attitudes that they show in classrooms and in public and when they're guests in other people's houses? And what the way they talk to their parents? Because we have allowed them to believe that being civil and polite and courteous is demeaning, and you're not showing your self-worth if you're polite and respectful. You're a wuss and a wimp and a coward. Have a caller online. Hang on, folks. Hello there.
Hi, Miss Terry. It's Linda from California. How are you today?
Hi, Linda. I'm doing great. A little confused. I had worked at changing the time. Well, now apparently it's changed.
Yeah, so I think it's because Hollis set it up and then Yola never changed it and she got sick and it's been a mess. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I tried to, I went in and fixed it. So anyway, when I was watching this gentleman, when you're talking about the television shows, et cetera, the whole culture, whether it's music, then you go, when you went back to the 60s, also what emerged out of that was, later on, the Van Jones, Cop Watch, cop-hating garbage.
Yep.
And, of course, he's just changed the radical, you know, pose to the meet the radical ends and put on a suit. And
exactly.
So this is what we have running the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's happened over these years is this type of conditioning to all of us, I mean, of course, we conservatives who actually think outside the box and think for ourselves, praise the Lord,
Amen.
Don't buy into we're not desensitized. We know right from wrong. We know what's going on. But these kids, my God, it's Pavlov's dogs. And
exactly.
He trained people how to do that in battle. So he knows.
Yes. He understands.
Absolutely.
It.
The man is brilliant. Thank God he's here. And that
yes,
website, I'm going to go check it out later because it sounds awesome.
I loved the discussion, too, about turning off the television for 10 days.
Oh, that's exactly the challenge he's talking about. And he said within that 10-day period, the kids were begging to go back to play games out in the street. They were begging to do it again. Their grades went up. Bullying was cut in half. And violence went down dramatically in 10 days.
Absolutely. Because it's putting people into a world where the other guy is not a graphic on a screen. He's a flesh and blood person who cries when he gets hurt and bleeds like you do. And there is no – when you take a child and you teach him subliminally that violence is fun, that killing people is fun.
And you're rewarded for it with points.
And you're rewarded for it. You know, children do not reason from until they do not learn how to reason unless they are guided and taught how to reason.
Exactly.
What we're doing to them, it's par for the course, Linda. We give them fill-in-the-blank, watered-down garbage instead of education. They don't read. They can't read because they actually have to put forth an effort. They cannot differentiate between fact and opinion. I run into that all the time.
Oh, Lord.
If you disagree with their opinion, you are limiting their freedom of speech because obviously it's my opinion, so nobody can disagree with me. I have to go through explaining to them that disagreeing with someone else's opinion is not denying their freedom to speak. I do not have to agree with you, but you can say anything you want to, provided it doesn't fall into the category of the three P's, which are forbidden in ISS. That's pejoratives, pornography, and profanity. Those three,
you're going to have to quote George Washington a little more often and just explain to them, if you had a book and you could take the time to read it, he used to say, please meet me on the battlefield of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they may not grasp that right away until you say it often enough.
Oh, and they might take that as, if I don't like your idea, let me go home and get my daddy's gun and I'll shoot you. You know, unfortunately, because battlefield is called.
Exactly.
Battlefield doesn't mean metaphor. Battlefield means as many dead bodies as you can rack up in the 22-minute particular phase of the game. But it struck me today, I guess, so much, Linda, because I went back today. It was our first day back after Christmas vacation. And thank fortune, the only people under the age of 50 that I had to deal with were my two grandsons, and they were remarkably well-behaved, and their mother would shoot both of them if they treated their grandfather or me with disrespect. And I had gotten a phone call just a little before the show from my grandson. He was very lackadaisical about turning in papers and was getting a D in three courses that he normally gets A's in. So his mother lowered the boom and made him write a research paper as an apology to his teacher because he didn't bother to do the one she assigned, with an accompanying letter saying, I know I won't get credit for this, but I do want to apologize for not fulfilling my obligations. And he had asked me to go over and check it for errors, and I did, and did a fair copy so he could see all the corrections. And he called to thank me for my help.
Well,
now,
that's good.
I'm guessing his mom made him do it, but he did it anyway.
Well, at least she's taking the lead of common sense and doing her part. I mean, this is what you have to have. You have to have responsible adults, you know, whether they're a society with munchkins or not, you know what I'm saying, wherever setting you're in. And there was an anecdotal story that came to mind today when I was watching this program, and I knew your education show was going to be on. When I was about 21, and we won't go into how many years ago that was, but I was taking several classes of ballet and jazz, et cetera, at a studio which was owned and run by a beautiful woman who still teaches up to this day. She's about 88 years old. She was originally from England. She's got her, talk about proper etiquette, this woman to the teeth, you know, with her sweet British accent. And she and I were both, because I was her training aide at, you know, like, assistant teacher during these classes, et cetera. And these two girls were sisters. One was about 16 and the other was going on 18, and they were just lovely. And they both studied, and they were so polite, we were taken aback. And this is going back a few years, okay? So, and once we found out more about how their parents raised them, this made all the sense in the world. When these girls were not taking ballet, they were studying piano or doing homework or studying French lessons. I mean, this is the background, and one went on to be a professional dancer with the Ballet Folklorico for many years down here in San Diego.
Cool.
The other got married and became a regular elementary school teacher. So this is what you produce with young ladies if you have
that
a mindset.
That is correct.
And I just wanted to share that with you because it was just amazing to me. And I go, oh, well, that makes sense. they're too busy to get in trouble.
And you know, and that's exactly it. And it, they weren't busy with things that just let them sit there like lumps on logs and watch it either.
Yeah,
they were
the devil's workshop of the idle hand. Yeah.
Yes, they were using mind and body to grow and learn. Well, today I was substituting, as I said earlier on the show, for one of our paraprofessionals who was out. And the one class that I was in was the only class under eighth grade, was a sixth grade history course. And it was a collaborative class because that's where you find parapros station. And one of the special ed students, a little boy, was let's organize our binders today. You know, make sure we've got all our papers and your homework is to get anything that you haven't finished. Well, he is one of those kids who couldn't organize his fingers, you know, as far as this is my right hand and this is my left. So one of the other students was helping him get all his papers together, and I was helping him, and so was his teacher when everybody else was working on theirs independently. And when we got everything put together, I asked him, did you tell the girl who had been helping him, did you say thank you? He said, yes, I did. And she said, yeah, he thanked me about 10 times. And I said, well, it is wonderful to see that there's a gentleman in here. And he just beamed like crazy.
Oh.
Found out from the teacher that a little before Christmas vacation, she'd noticed he had some dried blood in his ear. And she asked him what had happened. And he said, oh, well, that was just my papa. I said something he didn't like, and apparently his granddad, his papa, banged his head against the kitchen counter.
Oh, dear. Oh,
and yet, uh-huh. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And this child still had the understanding that when someone goes out of their way to help you, you say thank you.
Oh, that's, you know what? When you reward them, this is something we've got to continue to do. Is to reward people for the good behavior and admonish them for the bad. If we don't, it's going to be all lost. And
when she
I'm very grateful for that show today because I'm going to try to spread the word here in my group and say, if you guys have kids, get on this website.
Yes. So, and I was so pleased, Linda, that that I didn't find out about that until after I had praised him for his good manners.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and it's something that I do. If my students something right or correct or polite or courteous, I tell them so. And I explain to them, I address my students with an honorific in their surname. I don't call them by first name. And I have several reasons for it. And I explain to the children, one of the reasons I do it is because I expect them to show me respect. And since I believe in the golden rule, I respect them. And it's amazing. One of my repeat offenders, who normally has a mouth like you wouldn't believe, just sat and thought and looked at me for a minute, and he said, well, that makes sense.
Light bulb.
Yeah, exactly. It can be done. And the bad part is, instead of addressing it, instead of trying to make at least one of the things that school is supposed to do, is not necessarily to teach morality and ethics. That's something that should be taught at home. But we should have a place where morality, ethics, courtesy, and polite behavior is practiced all the time.
Agreed.
When I tutored in the private tutoring firm, and I was there for over 20 years, between my boss, who happened to be my husband's mother, but he and I weren't married at the time, and I were very, very explicit in the way that we spoke with one another and with the students, that we were always polite. We were always as soft-spoken as we could be. We never, ever, ever used profanity of any kind. And not once in the 20 years that I worked there did any student excuse me, use profanity to me or in front of me.
Well, awesome. You're right. It can be done. Yeah.
Yes. They knew it was not acceptable. They knew that because we modeled that behavior.
We were taught as well, the same from the same generation. You know, if Karen or myself, my sister, had ever been reported to be disrespectful to a teacher, not only would I have had a red butt for a month, I probably would have been on restriction to menopause.
Believe
my
me,
own.
Well, something that really struck me today, one of my, well, he's not one of my repeat offenders, but he's a youngster who, for whatever reason, spends most of his time in all of his classes asleep and refusing by, you know, passive resistance to do absolutely anything. But the teacher in this particular class, in which he was actually awake, said something about he was playing with his phone, and she had him sitting up at the desk beside her, and she told him that he was going to have to put it away right now. Well, I wasn't, all kinds of arguments. I just dropped it, and so on and so forth. And she said, oh, come on now. You know you were doing it. I saw you. And he said, well, you're a liar. And she said, you're a liar, too. You don't do this. You don't stoop to their level.
Exactly.
You don't. And unfortunately, if anybody, I have sent kids out of ISS saying something like that to me.
Wow.
It is. But this is, if you don't model the kind of behavior you expect, why are you surprised when they act like savages?
Because this is how they learn, by mimicking. This is how their brains work.
And we have got
the only way they can.
And we have got to get away in our teaching, professional teaching, get away from the ridiculous idea that we're there to be their best buddy. We are not. We are not their friends. That's another reason I address them by honorific and surname. No, I'm not your mommy, your grandmommy, your BFF, or whatever it is you want your buddies to call you. I am your teacher. I am your elder. I have a great deal more life experience and a lot more knowledge than you do. And I indicate that. I will not be your friend. I will help you in any way I can. I will be a mentor for you. You can come to me if you have a problem and ask my advice, and I will give you the best I have. But no, I'm not your buddy. I'm not your best friend.
And not until you graduate from some school.
Yeah. And
then you can buy me coffee.
Yeah, and a lot of them will say, well, what do you mean? Aren't you my friend? No, I'm your teacher. Well, that means you don't like me. I said, well, it doesn't matter whether I do or whether I don't. I'm still your teacher. Yeah, and you don't have to like somebody to learn from them. And in general, understanding that the role of a teacher, okay, is to be a helper and a mentor. It is not to be a buddy. Being a friend to these kids means being their peer. They do not understand the difference between peer and friend. If you tell a kid, especially a middle school age kid, that you're their friend, then all of a sudden that puts you on the same peer level as they are. And they treat you as if you were another 13-year-old.
Oh, how progressive.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, everybody, oh, but you being so stiff, they won't come to you. Oh, yes, they will.
Yes, they will.
They're going to be more likely to because you showed them, no, I'm not the same age as you are. I know more about living and living well than you do. Not because you preached it at them, but because you have set yourself up as a mentor, a wiser elder.
Uh-huh. And you know what? See, children have an, I think it's a natural instinct to know who's going to be able to help them and not, because at a base level, they're terrified.
you know, they are.
They didn't have mommy and daddy to run home to, you know, they'd be crying all the time. So,
Well, Doc just said in the chat room, hi, Doc, by the way, that it's like friends on Facebook. And that's what they think of. A friend is somebody who tells you everything about themselves and wants to know everything about you and agrees with you all the time and does all the same things that you do. And so if you are an adult, you're not the friend, the mentor friend. You're not a mentor to Telemachus. You are Johnny down the block to Freddie up the street. You are a peer, one of them. Well, no, I'm not.
Absolutely.
I don't use slang. I don't use current street talk, partly because they already know that. They don't need me to teach
it. And this is what Yeah, this is where the lines get blurred in today's society, and it's very dangerous, and it gets blurred not only with the violent videos, it gets blurred with what you were talking about with friends, peers, authoritarian, whatever.
And with
mentors,
the assumption,
and,
with the assumption that came in, and I saw it happen. I watched it over a period of 30 years. I saw it with my own stepdaughters. The idea that being courteous was somehow or other being acting like you were somebody's slave.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. And it came in through a lot of the young black families during the Civil Rights Movement. Because the obligatory yes and no, sir, became a rallying cry of, no, I don't have to say no, sir, to you, whitey, I'm not your slave. Well, instead, it got tainted with a historical perspective that was no longer the case.
Right.
My family didn't insist on yes, ma'am, yes, sir. I was not brought up in the South. I was brought up in the Midwest. My husband was brought up in the South. Yes, ma'am, no, sir, no, ma'am, yes, sir, were de rigueur. Plus, he was brought up in a military family. And I remember hearing a news blurb on the radio 30 or 40 years ago. A little boy was lost in New York City, and the police officers were putting out bulletins describing him and looking for his parents. And one of the things they stated was that they assumed he was from the South because he was polite. Anywhere from, you know, from the North. Has to be a Southern kid. But that kind of politeness doesn't demean the person who offers it. The person who sees courtesy and respectful civility as demeaning, they're demeaning themselves because they're saying that they are inherently unworthy of any respect. So they're going to shove it in your face that you aren't either.
Lovely.
It's a twisted view of manners. Lord,
and reality.
Remember the report cards that had the conduct or behavior grade?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I took a story once on the radio show here about my husband, and when he was in like first grade, I think, at a military base in Japan, and he brought home his report card, and he had, what was it, a D in conduct? Yeah, he got a D in conduct. His mother and father were about ready to skin him alive. His dad was a colonel in the Army, on the general staff, the whole bit. So, no. You don't get a D in conduct if you're attending school on a military base and your daddy is an officer. You just don't do it. So, anyway, his mom went to the school to discuss his horrible conduct and what could she do to make it better. Well, it turns out that his horrible conduct was that he addressed his teacher with, yes, ma'am, and the teacher was incensed. She said to his mom, I'm not a N-word.
Oh, my Lord.
So his mom walked out, went to the base commander, and told him. The teacher was hauled into the base commander's office, and it was made very clear to her that children of military families were expected to say, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. And if she had a problem with that, she should seek other employment.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm going to let you wind it up. I know you're running out of time, but thanks so much for taking my call. It's a great subject.
It's always a pleasure. And with a little luck, maybe we can go into it at proper length next week since I missed out on the first 45 minutes. But we will be on every Thursday. And please tune in for my friend Linda's show on Wednesdays, right from the Left Coast. Join us every night of the week for a radio show from PatriotFamilies.com, who really are well-mannered, civil, intelligent, conservative people who believe that sharing ideas and disagreeing on the battlefield of ideas is the lifeblood of a living representative democracy, who take to heart the statement that I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. You can disagree without descending to personal attack. You can argue vehemently on principle or economics or politics or religion and spirituality so long as you remember that what you're arguing with is not an enemy, not an alien from another planet, but another human being who may be different from you in many ways. But in general, we are all pink on the inside. It's quite easy to be civil if you remember that. And although I may fail at living the golden rule 24/7, 365 a year, I never fail to try to live it. And I try my best to teach my students to live it as well, both by precept and by example. And again, to all those of you listening and my friends in the chat room, my apologies for the mix-up in time tonight. We have rescheduled, finally, it's Blog Talk has accepted the reschedule, and Patriot Educations, starting tonight and continuing ad nauseum, will be on every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, instead of the 7 o'clock time period that we had before. Again, we'll be back next Thursday at 6 p.m. Come and join us here at Patriot Education, and come visit us, www.patriotfamilies.com. That's our website, and you know that you will be welcome, because, as our intro usually says, even though we didn't hear it tonight, you are the nation, ladies and gentlemen. You are the ones who make this country the greatest in the history of mankind. We are exceptional as Americans, not because it's genetic, not because great-great-granddaddy came here before 1800, not because we live in an American city, not because we work in American businesses, but because we all of us, have the freedom to try and the opportunity to succeed. That is the exceptionalism of America. Not that everybody here is a saint, or everybody here is a millionaire, or everybody here is a philanthropist. It's that everybody here believes that he or she has a shot at being super at something. Whatever it is, we believe we have opportunity. We believe that every one of our fellow citizens deserves the same right to an opportunity that we enjoy. That kind of exceptionalism, ladies and gentlemen, is the kind that I believe in and what I try to teach. I know, having been in education for a fairly long time, that there's no guarantee that every student who passes between my desk and the door will be a better person for something that I have taught them. 99% of them probably won't remember me, and the 1% that do, about half of them, will think I'm an evil, wicked old witch. But there might be one or two who will learn something and who will remember me because something I said or something I did gave them a new view or the world they lived in. And that's why I keep doing what I do. Thank you so much for listening in tonight, folks. And thank you for being in the chat room, Doc and Linda. And we'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Patriot Education. Meanwhile, if you have any suggestions for a topic you'd like me to explore, please send a message to the show or visit our website, www.patriotfamilies.com, and leave a message for me. Let me know what you'd like to hear about or what you'd like to talk about. There's lots and lots and lots we can share with one another, ladies and gentlemen, and I look forward to doing so for a long time to come. Happy New Year, everybody. Have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you next week. Good night.